Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend, Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm doing all right. That was a good cork pop.
That was a really good cork pop.
That was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Andrew, you know, sometimes I think about this, but I do wish that there was some sort of pot with this board, right? These dials, these faders are fine. But if you've ever potted out music with like a serious, it's a totally different.
I don't even know what you're saying right now.
So if you're using like a professional radio board, when you fade out the music, you use this giant potentiometer. It's like a 4-inch, and it's okay. Always super heavy, and it's just like
just precise, tactile.
It's so nice. That's right. And so using these tiny little aluminum faders is much less satisfying. Yeah.
I mean, we could upgrade.
Yeah. I think that equipment that I'm referring to is like multi-thousands of dollars.
Whatever. We could own a sound stage, and then when we're not recording, we could rent it out to other people.
Yeah. You know, when I was in high school, I was at the KBPS, the Benson High School radio. We would go on the radio. Real radio. It was pretty cool, but
it's public access, but
I mean, that's right. But we played music. We had, you know, all the subscriptions, and we had an old AP feed computer. It was cool.
That was pretty neat.
Yeah, it was cool. Andrew, how are you?
I'm good. I took this week off because I just didn't feel like working. So I'm good. I just like chilled and then got into a flurry of activity and realized, oh shit, it's time to record. So I'm still like coming down off of a flurry of activity, but I made a really fantastic chili. So what I've taken to doing is when I do like a whole chicken or pork shoulder, I give it 2 days with that, and then I repurpose it into chili. And my new chili method is really fantastic. So everyone undercooks onions. That's just a really strong opinion that I hold. Even if they're sweet onions, I think everyone undercooks them unless you're serving raw onions.
I like a crunchy onion, especially in chili.
Oh no, they gotta be soft. Cause that's like, you can put another addition of onions in, right? Uh-huh. Like hops.
Sure.
But the first onions that go in, that takes 30 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
Like they got to sweat for 30 minutes.
Oh, like pre adding the additional things?
Yes, they are just in the pan browning for like half an hour. Occasional stir, a little bit of salt and pepper.
Okay.
They get so sweet and they dry out and they absorb so much flavor and they push so much. It's fantastic. You're undercooking your onions. And then some garlic. And now what I've started doing is a whole can of chipotles and adobo. I just pop that thing in and throw it into the pan and just kind of sweat it for a few minutes and then throw all that into the blender. And then I start working my seasonings into it.
Okay.
So it's like a low grade mole as my foundation.
Sure.
Oh my gosh. It's even good when it's in the slow cooker.
What are you using for your chili base?
And then I may do a roux or a slurry or something.
Oh, okay.
Just as a thickener.
Yeah.
Today I used to use a slurry cause I was using the slow cooker, but I always hate like, I grew up eating slow cooker chili and I was like, man, this is so good. But the problem is it all tastes the same. There's no like, it's all kind of flat. There's no real unique flavors in it. Like stovetop chili is just so much better.
Yeah.
Like there's a time when it gets overcooked, even if it's not actually overcooked. But that's how I've started. That's my new like foundational flavors of chili.
Yeah.
It's so good. If I have any dried chilies, I'll steep those for a little bit and throw those in the blender too and like get it closer to like a mole base for the chili.
Sure.
Turned out fantastic.
What kind of beans are you using?
Depends on how much meat is available. If there's meat, like half of a chicken and some pork shoulder, then I don't do beans.
No beans. You're one of those.
No beans. But if I do beans, I'll do like a can of pinto and a can of dark red kidney.
Yeah. I recognize that chili is like OG chili is no bean, but I like bean chili too.
Like, yeah. But if I have a bunch of meat, I'm not going to keep adding stuff into it to,
yeah.
It's a delivery mechanism for the meat.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. I'm a pinto bean guy. I'm just like, give me a pinto bean. That's what I want. Although I have had black eyed pea chili, which is nice. That's
good. Sometimes I'll do black beans just to add a little bit of color differentiation in it.
But give me that pinto bean. But in any event, we're not here to talk about what?
Chili.
Chili or
I don't even know chili? What you talked about.
What did I talk about? Nothing, oh, I talked basically. About potentiometers on professional grade sound equipment. We're definitely not here to talk about that. Rather, we're here to talk about watches. I will just mention, we're drinking KC12, Knob Creek 12 tonight, which is, you know, kind of hard to find, especially here, right? You can't find Knob Creek 12 because I think it's one of those whiskeys that's like $60, 100 proof. It's just always a banger. I mean, when you compare this to like McKenna, Bottled and Bond, this is a way better bourbon. I just wish it was easier to find. I mean, this bottle is the only one I've found on the shelf. And so it's a bit precious to me, which feels absurd to have Knob Creek 12 feel like a precious. But
scarcity, man.
I know. It's so good. God, I love this. I like the, yeah, I mean, there's other knobs I like. I particularly like this Knob Creek 12. You just can't fucking find it.
I can't even take a drink. I gotta compose myself here.
You're gonna be okay. You want to get us started?
Yeah, let me get us started. Let's actually start with, I think, a watch that we'll take a little bit of time on. The new Notice Obscura 2.
Sure.
So you guys might not know this about us. We really like Notice. Not just their watches, but we like the people behind Notice and the brand and what they've brought to the watch industry aside from the brand Notice, right? They've done a really cool thing in the industry, and they're really great people, and we like them. So, let me get to the bottom of this. Good Lord. It's a long article. I'm sorry. The Obscura 2. We have a black textured fume dial. Fume? I don't really know. That's a word that doesn't make sense. It's a fumed dial. Luminous markers. And in the rehout are ISO values. So this is a photography themed novelty watch that is not novelty in any sense of the word, but for this edition of the ISO values. 316L steel. It is a DLC coated, I don't really understand. So a black DLC coated bronze bidirectional limited rotation bezel. So there's 16 clicks between 12 and 4 to be able to do your ISO calculations on this watch. So it's actually like a functional ISO calculating watch, and not being a great photographer, I don't super understand that mechanism, but for somebody who does, I imagine it could be valuable. And if not, it's at least a nice little thing. 40 millimeter case. I mean, 38 without the bezel, 47 lug to lug, 11.7 thick, 100 meters of water resistance, and the classic Notice price point coming in at $650. This is great.
The first one was the same. So this is actually, so they released this in 2024. They released 100, just a limited edition, 100 watches that they made with Juan Martinez, who's the founder of Beers and Cameras. And Juan actually has patented through the USPTO, has patented this bezel design. It is effectively a mechanical indicator of the quote unquote Sunny 16 rule, which is a system that you can use even sans, you can use Sunny 16 sans watch, right? In fact, I know some people have, you know, it's sort of a, you know, an analog hipster tattoo. You can get Sunny 16 tattooed
You can get anything on tattooed.
On your forearm, right? Which is...
face, if you really wanted to go that far.
But, you know, if you're shooting, especially, like, say, in 2026, if you're shooting with a vintage film camera, which is really your option if you're going to shoot film, you're shooting, there is a very high likelihood that one of two things will be true. Either the light meter in your camera will be busted, or the battery that was used to power the light meter is no longer available functionally. Now, there's conversions and, you know, there's been many, many, many tomes of forum posts written about whatever camera you have, how you might get around that. But oftentimes what people do is they just say, you know, Sunny 16 is good enough. Film gives you a little bit of flexibility. And so as long as you're exposing the film enough, Sunny 16 generally gets you a good enough exposure that you can adjust it in the lab. It's a really clever, and this is actually a really clever, you know, we talk about, you know, whatever, your tennis watch or your golf watch or whatever. This is actually a, like, useful thing. If you're out shooting film, this is a relatively pragmatic thing to have. And the way it works, it's... If you know Sunny 16, you'll see it and you'll be like, oh, okay, I get how this works. And if you don't, we're not going to try to explain how to use it here because it just doesn't translate to words. You kind of need to have it in front of you. But yeah, effectively, Andrew, you said it's got ISO values, you know, whether you're shooting ISO 100 or ISO 800 film, you know, generally speaking, if you're outside, you're not going to be shooting 1600. You're going to be shooting, you know, 400 or maybe 800. Or 100, right? Or 200, right? You're going to be shooting in those ranges. It has all those ranges covered. And then it allows you to adjust for, you know, I'm shooting at whatever f-stop, and this is how fast your shutter speed needs to be. It gives you the ability to quickly reference based on the available sunlight that you see with your eyes. It gives you the ability to quickly sort of move your own settings on your camera and get a relatively good exposure. It's a clever device. And of course he didn't invent the Sunny 16 rule, but it's a on your wrist, you know, this is a really actually a practical complication for someone that shoots analog cameras.
Or that gives a shit about analog cameras.
They made a few adjustments to this. You know, one of the big ones is that they have removed the Beers and Cameras logo from the dial. I think that's just an aesthetic choice, and it definitely cleans up the dial a little bit. But this is still the same watch, right? It's a really neat watch, and from what I can tell, it's not limited this time, right?
It looks like it is now a permanent part of the collection,
and it's in their design lab. So who knows what that means? It's at least not specifically limited. So they have the ability, if they sell a bucket load of these, I think, to just make as many as they think they're going to sell.
Keep printing them out. They're not printing them out. These are manufactured.
And this has that sort of bezel, proud bezel that Notice does, which is to say a 38 millimeter case with a 40 millimeter bezel. 11.7 thick, which is fine. It's great. 20 millimeter lugs. Yeah, this is a really clever watch. I do like their seconds hands that they use on these, which is like sort of, I don't know, rally striped. What are we going to call that?
Candy cane maybe, but that's flat.
Yeah. And we've got an NH38. Seiko Notice has worked with Seiko closely over the years. And I think that movement makes a lot of sense. Nothing too fancy. And it's a great price, right? These are right there, what, $695, Andrew?
$675, I think. I gotta get to the bottom again here.
This is a long article that we've linked. Yeah. We're gonna link a Fratello article. Yeah, $650 or in DLC, or excuse me, $650 for steel or $725 for DLC. Yeah, this is a clever watch. I like it a lot. And I like the fact that it's not limited.
Me too. And you know what? The first five comments, they aren't shitty.
Yeah.
Which is unusual.
Yeah, it looks like a proper tool complication.
Yeah. There's this one that says, leaving aside that a photographer worth his salt will do this off the top of his head, or her salt and her head for that matter. But I don't know anyone anymore that still shoots on film.
Yeah, like that's a weird comment. And frankly, I shoot film often enough, and I still have to reference. I still reference. You know, typically the internet, right? Which is pretty straightforward, but
which, like, is what you should do if it's not something that you're doing with such regularity.
Yeah.
You should just reference things real quick.
Yeah.
Because that's how you get it right, rather than just guessing.
Yeah, that's right.
And that kind of goes for all disciplines, not just photography.
Yeah. If you were shooting often enough that you just knew Sonny 16, good on you. But I think, you know, his second paragraph is like, with that said, most people shoot digital and you don't have to do that. Like, hey, thanks. Tough guy. Yeah, that's right.
Most people have a cell phone in their pocket and don't need to carry wear a watch.
That's right. Let's stick with Seiko, although that was okay. Not
a little bit of a pivot, but yeah.
That was not Seiko per se, although it did include a Seiko movement. You know, we had, in fact, we had an episode recently entitled We Hate Seiko Now, which, okay. That's fair. I think it's fair. I named the episode.
I was going to say, you named the episode, so...
But this is a release that I'm okay with. So Seiko has released...
But this is the kind of release that is why we hate Seiko.
Interesting. Come back to that thought. Hold that thought. So Seiko has released new colorways and upgraded specifications for their 1968 Heritage Divers GMT. I love this watch. I've always loved this watch. I love the old version. I love this version. This is a good Seiko watch. And you know, I'm sort of like super high on the SPB 143, right? Like I still have an SKX, my very first watch, and I love it, right? We don't actually hate Seiko, but we do, I think, I'll just speak for myself. I do kind of really dislike, nay hate, the way Seiko is releasing watches in 2026. With that said, this harkens back to 1968, where Seiko introduced Japan's first high beat automatic movement and incorporated into this sort of iconic case, which I'm going to refer to as sort of the Marine Master case. That's what my brain goes to, but of course, that's not totally accurate. And that is something that Seiko's kept in their DNA throughout, maybe not at every stage, but this is an oft reoccurring case DNA that Seiko's used over the years. And then in 2023...
With great frequency.
Yeah.
There's about 25 watches that carry this general shape of case.
That's right. And in 2023, Seiko released their 1968 Heritage GMT, pairing it with their brand new 6R54 GMT complication. At the time, it was a 200 meter watch with their, you know, really nice 72 hour power reserve. We were high on that watch. Hey, this is great. This is cool. This is neat. We like this. Well, they have now upgraded that to a 300 meter water resistance, which between 200 and 300 is still just 11 points, you guys.
Yep. No extra points.
With that said, it's cool. I'm good with this being a 300 meter
upgraded watch. Clasp on it.
Yes, with their 2.5 millimeter micro adjustment points. I think there's six of them. Still 42, and just 13.3 thick, which is like the thickness of most Grand Seiko dress watches.
Yes.
You know, so here we are. We're getting 300 meters in a proper jet dive GMT at 13.3. thick. Hey, Seiko, you know how to make good watches. It turns out you know how to make good watches. Great 20 millimeter lug width.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the dimensions on this, like the geometry of the dimensions, is just perfect.
So great. They've got this in both a black and a green. A fantastic. I'm going to call that British Racing green, at least on the ceramic bezel, less so on the dial.
I hate your color descriptions.
More of a jade with the sunburst kind of dial. We get a little green jadiness. Sea
because, you know, behind it you have like clearly a tropical shore with that like really vibrant green ocean.
And then yellow jam tea, arrows on both of these. Yeah, these are great. So references are HBC001, HBC002. Of course, we've got 6R54. And they're $1,700. Which, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But in 2026, I mean, that's the right...
That's how much you're paying for this quality of manufacturing, this movement.
Yeah.
And coming from Seiko.
Yeah, I don't mind the price on this.
You're getting worse bang for your buck and plenty of other Seikos at a higher price point.
Sure. This is just a proper release. This is a Seiko that, if you were into it, I'd just say buy it. This is great. Ceramic bezels on both of these. And this is a sort of flagship Prospects type of release, I think.
Yes. And
and it lives up to that description.
And yes, but it's also so, I feel like, uncommon to see good iterative releases from Seiko. What is happening?
Yeah, I'm looking at, what's the strap you're wearing on your Doxa?
A Silicone Elite.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it looks great.
It's awesome on it.
Yeah. It's blue.
No, it's black.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You just described British racing green, and at 4 feet away, you're discovered like, this is black.
I don't know. It was coming across as blue.
Maybe the TV reflection.
Yeah, I don't know.
I've had it on the Silicone Elite for. I love it on the Barton. Yeah. I put it on the.
Yeah, that looks great.
On the Everest, but the Everest is just kind of thick.
It is thick.
Yeah. It's just. I wear that on the C63. I think that's a better fit.
Is it 20mm lug width?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a Foster bracelet or a Foster strap?
Yes.
You should try it on there. I bet it would do well on that.
I bet it would, but I have no idea where it is.
I've got a couple.
It might be on my Foster.
I got one or two.
you do?
I do.
It might be on my Foster.
I'll bring you one.
Sorry also, for the distraction. Everyone was making all kinds of weird faces.
No, I was trying to figure out what you were wearing.
I mean, what's behind? Like, is there a ghost behind me? Did one of my kids sneak in? Like, what's happening here?
Yeah, it's got a little bit of a blue cast in the light that I'm getting off the...
I think it's the television. I think you're getting a weird, like, black mirror.
And we've got like a bit of sunset coming in the window.
It is a
little bit weird right now. So anyway, well done, Seiko.
Yes, it's a good iterative release from Seiko, which is... decreasingly common. They'll update a watch and make it worse. That's why we hate Seiko, because we know that they can do it right and they can make good updates and drop good releases. Right. But then
we hate Seiko because we love Seiko.
And then we get so many shitters in between. We're like, what were you like, who is the asshole that's signing off on both of these things? And why does he still have all of his fingers?
Maybe he doesn't. It's just him.
Yeah.
I don't know what I mean by that, you guys. I don't mean anything specific. I was just saying stupid stuff.
Everett cuts his fingers a lot. Like, it's possible that he's just like ripping through these papers and not actually signing them. He's just using his fountain pen and has like occasionally removing digits at the speed at which he's approving.
I am currently designs. Bandaged up after having spent the entirety of the last week in a like full finger bandage and splint because I cut my finger so bad. So Andrew is speaking truth to reality. What's next?
The Fears Brunswick, the Brunswick 40 Helmsman Endurance specification, and this is just the Fears Brunswick 40. But I love this color scheme. When I saw it, I immediately evoked like Ferrer, like really great color palette use. It's this gorgeous, crispy white with a really complimentary. Feel free. You have the blue lexicon.
Yeah, from I don't your know. Paint days. I'm gonna say we've got a little bit of denim here. Maybe a cornflower.
Similarly colored rotor on the back of the into the see through case back. A great stitched white with matching blue bracelet or strap. This is just. The colors are what got me so excited.
Yeah, cornflower. I've settled on cornflower. That rehout is cornflower.
All right. It's a cornflower just band around the outside on the rehout. Little bit of it on the markers. The hands are just, this color is what got me smitten. This is the first Brunswick that I've saw that I'm like, I should buy this.
I'm showing Andrew hexadecimal cornflower blue.
You know, I I found,
or I guess not hexadecimal, hex code for cornflower blue.
I found that it's, I don't know if it's something about viewing it on my phone versus a computer. The color comes completely different
to me. You know, at some point you're going to tell me, hey, I had my eyes checked and I'm completely colorblind. And you know, I won't say anything mean when that happens.
I won't say
that out loud. I won't say anything mean out loud to you.
To me. Yeah, no, I expect that other people will. It's possible. Like I wouldn't be shocked if I had a bunch of color deficiencies and like I can see the primary colors and that's good enough.
No, this is good. You know, Andrew, you said you know, this is giving you fairer vibes. I don't see that, but I do feel like this is taking that sort of classic nautical, you know, Breitling or pick your
regatta special, yeah,
and making it modern and fun, punchy and fun, right? I almost said funchy.
I like funchy,
funchy, punchy and fun.
I'm not sure what it would mean,
but it means punchy and fun.
I'm down to try
funchy. It does sound like a sex act. Yeah. Hey, you went funchy on her.
That made it sound bad.
I know. I took it too far. I'm sorry.
It was the tone of your voice.
I'll back it up. No, it's good. I don't have quite as much appreciation for what they've done here. This actually feels super conservative. No. I think it's great. I just don't know that it's like when you say, oh, this gives me Farrah vibes, like I'm expecting, you know.
Except Farrah is monochromatic these days. It gives me like Farrah in that transition period from like a lot of brightness to like now where everything's just one color.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm trying to figure out like what did you not talk about that I can talk about as I go now. I'll just pick whatever I want because you know what?
Because of America. Screw you. Stuff.
I'm going to talk about a watch that I really like. And I want to like, but I think it's too expensive. So the Rado Captain Cook with a shimmering gold dial. So
feels super appropriate.
It does. It does. Off the bat, this is a Rado Captain Cook. If you're picturing a Rado Captain Cook, that's what this watch is.
Think no harder.
Okay. But we've got a couple things that set this thing apart. So first, Rado Captain Cook, pretty fucking dressy for a dive watch, right? I don't think it's unfair to suggest this leans towards dress diver.
Absolutely not. That's that I think encapsulates the 1960s, 1970s skin diver feel.
And despite the fact that this is not an H case, I think this definitely feels like a skin diver. They have now sort of made a couple tweaks to this. Very, very, very subtle tweaks. This is a 39 millimeter Captain Cook. You can also get Captain Cooks in 37 and 43. So this is the more sort of middle of the road, 39.
Which is such a perfect size for it. 37, I feel like, would be a little bit too small for this case shape.
That's right. That includes a 45 millimeter lug to lug and 12 millimeters thick, which sort of classic dimensions. It is a 300 meter watch, so despite the fact that we're saying it gives skin diver vibes, this is a perfectly adequate diving tool to the extent you were looking for such a thing. In this case, they have zhushed it up. Is zhush an appropriate word for this?
I've never heard it with so much SH. I've heard it with a lot more zzz.
Zhushed.
Zhushed. Maybe more J's.
Zhushed.
Zhushed. You're getting dangerous now. Oh. Compose yourself. This is a family show.
So we do have a high-tech, you know, Rado's got their high-tech ceramic. We've got a high-tech ceramic bezel that has indications at you know, Arabic indications at 15, 30, and 45, and then a triangle at 60. We've got a PVD gold bezel framing that black high-tech ceramic insert, which is gorgeous. It's a steel mid-case, steel bracelet, polished beads of rice, and then we've got this just the bezel PVD gold, which is great.
I think if this was a crispy white dial or black, I think I'm all in on just that PVD'd bezel.
I think they nail it here. And then we move into the dial, and it's a totally new dial for Rado. They have taken, what's the system
it's,
here?
It's diamond powder coated, or diamond powder like finished.
It's a multi stage.
They like powder it, and then gold PVD.
Yes.
The dial.
So, it basically looks like golden diamond powder.
Yeah. Right? Or like a kind of crumpled up gold leaf. Like,
sure.
It doesn't exactly look like gold leaf, but it's really, really similar, but it's also kind of sparkly and
gold sand.
Yeah.
It's terrific. It's fucking great. And then Captain Cook, Rado does such a good job with their fonts on the Captain Cook. You've got a swinging anchor at 12 o'clock because it's Rado. I love this watch. This gives me like Heuer vibes, like maybe Tag Heuer vibes, like early Tag Heuer vibe. This just feels like 90s, but also modern. I love it. I think this is such a great watch. We've got gold PVD hands, gold markers, applied markers.
But white on the bezel.
With white numerals on the bezel and white loom fill here. Yeah. This is just a crispy, crispy 80s cocaine watch is what this is.
Yeah, if you size this bracelet appropriately, you're wearing it wrong. You need to have three extra links.
Yeah, a little bit extra, for sure. You need a little bit extra.
Really got to stretch out that Jubilee. You got to get some good jangle on that.
Captain Cook polishes a lot more material than other companies, and so you got a lot of polish. I just think this is great. Here's what I don't love. It's $2,500, which is
it's more than that. It's 2,500 Swiss francs.
Oh yeah, 2,450 Swiss francs. So it's going to be $3,000. That's a tough pill for me to swallow. I think that this is a little bit expensive for what it is. You've got the Rado R763, which is a Powermatic 80.
What's the not gold leaf Rado Captain Cook cost?
I don't know. Good question. Not sure. Rado, Captain Cook. Yeah, Joma Shop, $1,750. So it's probably not that much more expensive than an SRP. So maybe this comes in at $2,000. Yeah, $2,500 for just a standard Captain Cook. So
I don't know why that's a hard pill for me to swallow.
Yeah, they've got this $2,900. So it's $400 more than your standard fare Captain. Different prices for different Captain Cooks.
It's interesting. Yeah, I noticed that, and so I stopped looking. I don't know why I have trouble holding this brand in the regard that it frankly deserves to be held in.
Well, does it deserve that regard? I mean, it's a Swatch brand that's kind of like, and they're not doing anything special here.
I mean, they're
using Powermatic 80s. Like,
we don't poo-poo Tissot at dropping a $2,500 watch.
Sure, I do. Sure, I do.
Do we?
I do.
On here?
I'm sure I would if you wanted me to bring one up. No, this is it's just too much money. I think $1,750 is what these look like. They're going for on Joma, which I'm okay with that.
Yeah, sub $2,000. I think I'm tolerant of.
If that's the going market rate, I'm okay with that.
I mean, I've never seen these in the wild.
No, I've never seen. I mean, I've seen Rado's in the wild, but never seen a Captain Cook. Yeah.
I'd like to see one. I like them. I like the watch. And I like this iteration of it too.
This is cool watch, man. I'm into this. I really like what they did with this. What's next?
Oh, I was captivated by this article that's entitled Chinese Haute Horology from the Geneva of the East.
You know what, Andrew? I knew you were going to pull this watch when I was reading about it.
The new Peacock Haiyi Tourbillon U limited edition. And we'll link to this article, obviously. But what we have here is a watch complication that I just could not care less about in a tourbillon. I understand that they are a horological masterpiece, and the craftsmanship that goes into them is second to none, theoretically. But I just, you know, I don't care. Maybe it's because I can't afford them that I don't care. Like, but I care about multi-million dollar houses, and I definitely can't afford that. So,
do you care about multi-million dollar houses?
Yeah, I like will routinely doom scroll like luxury home listings and just look at them.
I could care less. I couldn't care less.
Oh no, I love them.
Interesting.
Or like when I go into a house and I see like all of the outlet covers, screws are facing the same direction, I'm like, man, this craftsman fucking cared.
I am much more inclined to scroll through like brand new $1 million construction that's fucking terrible. I find that fascinating.
Oh, I love seeing
that. As a construction defect lawyer,
yeah,
I find
that. I love that too. And also OSHA, is this okay? The rabbit holes go deep.
McMansion hell.
So what we have here, and I want to start first. This is $3,500. This is...
Which for a tourbillon is nuts.
Nothing. It is nothing. So this is a Peacock PAX9610B in-house flying tourbillon caliber. It's manual widening, 28.8, 60-hour power reserve with a Gyromax free sprung balance, 4 inertia weights, rainbow Geneva striping, snailing, perlage, beveled screws.
904L steel.
Yes, the whole thing.
300 meters of water resistance.
Because why not? 40 millimeter case, 47 lug to lug. Here's 12.2 thick, hand executed Lindsay engraving on the green enamel dial.
Like 300 waves or something.
The
like
only
that.
Way that I can make this make sense with the price is that somebody is trying to lose a bucket load of money in a business so they can write it off on their taxes.
Oh, you think this is a, like a money laundering operation?
No, I think it's just that they're doing something really cool and they're totally fine. Look at the hands on these.
I know the hands are fantastic.
The hands are totally solid, but they're translucent. They're sapphire, aren't they? Like sapphire cut hands. But then I came back to the title, the Geneva of the East, and I was looking at this, not even arguably affordable, this objectively affordable watch that comes with all the same bells and whistles that if you get out of Switzerland is going to be five or more figures. And I'm having trouble making it compute. As the watch goes, I look at it and I'm like, oh, that's a really attractive watch. And it could be made by any one of a handful of Swiss brands and costs way more money than I ever will be comfortable spending on a watch that I actually just don't care about. But then you like get into the spec sheet and the price and it just, what's going on? Is this the capabilities of Chinese manufacturing catching up now to Swiss manufacturing practices and methodologies and saying we can also do it and cheaper?
Well, I mean, I think that's precisely what's happened here. You know, we take it for granted. We talked about this, I think, 2 weeks ago, maybe last week. You know, how manufacturing in places like China and India are, you know, all of the manufacturing is happening there. So it's not a huge leap to suggest that in the place that makes everything... And I mean
everything else, yeah.
Everything from, you know, the most crude manufacturing practices to, you know, silicon and everything.
Hey, you look at their semiconductor manufacturing.
That's right. I mean, it's not a giant leap to say, well, this place should be able to make a fucking tourbillon and package it in this wonderful, objectively wonderful package. For less, they're going to do it for less. Right.
And they are
right. This is a feat. I would just stop there. This is a feat. And, you know, it makes this thing that is unobtainium for most people in most circumstances obtainable. right? And let's not pretend like $3,500 is nothing. You know, it's more than I've spent on all but one of the watches I own. And I think the same is true for you, Andrew.
Yes.
You know, here we are, I think, self-professed watch people. Now some of you listening are going to have spent much more on watches. And some of you listening, I would venture to guess, have never spent, you know, maybe 20% of this on a watch. And that's okay. But the point is, $3,500 for a watch enthusiast is a number that's like, it's somewhere, it's rattling around in your head as achievable, maybe in the future, maybe right now. This, you know, versus say $100,000 or $60,000.
A $3,500 watch is a watch I can buy this year. A $60,000 watch is a watch that I'm
never going to buy.
Never.
Maybe when you're retired and you are like, now's the time.
Or but. If I'm in a marked sidewalk and I get hit by a Target truck.
Right. And lose an eye.
A piece of me. Yeah. like more than what I leave on the pavement. Yeah.
That's right. I mean, this is not an amount of money that's wild. And that's where the feat exists, right? Mm-hmm. This is something that you can't get.
Because there are other tourbillons out there that have been produced by not Haute Horology. Who somebody just did one recently.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong about that. Who was that? It was, I think, a Western company. With that said, Andrew, this is the first time I think I've seen a watch of this sort of provenance.
Ilk.
Yeah. That I thought, I'd wear that. I'd fucking wear this. Mm-hmm. I'd wear this watch. If I had this in my collection, I'd wear it. I don't love the bezel. I don't love the sort of domey sapphire bezel. I hate the font on the bezel. Hate. But these are, and I hate those. I hate the notch bezel. It's just not my thing. But these are subjective criticisms. This is a wonderful watch.
Yes. And in the realm of affordable.
Really, really wonderful watch. Yeah, very cool. I knew you were gonna pick that one. I don't have it on my list, but I was reading and I was like, Andrew's gonna.
The title alone got me to read it, and then I got to the bottom of the article and I was like, what?
Yeah. Here's a watch I saw only on a single website, and the website is A Timely Perspective. I know nothing about this website. But they're a going concern. I just don't know anything about them. And I don't think we've ever linked to A Timely Perspective on the show. But this is the only website I found this watch on. But it is a watch from Bulova. It is a watch from Bulova. Bulova having started in New York in 1875 in the very lower section of Manhattan. Bulova has released a watch for America's 250th anniversary, and specifically for a New York regatta event where dozens of international tall ships, or maybe not a regatta event, maybe that's wrong, dozens of international tall ships were gathered for Sail Forth 250, a six-day celebration marking the nation's 250 years of freedom, blah, blah, blah. It's a multi-day sort of sailing event that's going to happen in New York.
With tall ships, specifically.
With tall ships to celebrate the 250th anniversary. Bulova, having their roots in New York, has
the very lower end of Manhattan,
decided to come in and be the official watch for this. And they've released, I think, a banger for this. Mm-hmm. This is a snorkel, which is a watch that I really like.
It's love the versatility of the snorkel. I love that they've chosen this to be one of their collaborative platforms because it's so versatile. It's so easy to change without having to do much to. Yeah. And every color iteration that you can throw on this has such an impact on the rest of the watch.
They're releasing this in their high-tech ceramic, which is in all white, which is terrific, with a blue and red bezel, quartz movement in this, water resistant to 100 meters, and which is to say it is not a particularly
special watch, horologically speaking, minus that high-tech ceramic case. But it's just, it's lovely, and it's red, white, and blue if you're into that sort of thing. We've got a great sort of wave pattern on the red dial, which I love a red dial, especially when it's tastefully done, and I think here it's tastefully done.
You can find this on the Bulova website also.
Yeah, yeah.
Under $300.
Yeah, it's a snorkel, right? Mm-hmm. I just think it's great. I think if you were into something like this, if you're at all inclined to celebrate America in 2026, this might be a fun way to do it. I do gather that American patriotism is not at an all-time high right now, and that's all I have to say about that. With that said, I do really like this watch, and I think it's a lot of fun, and I love the fact that Bulova's doing it in New York, which is their home. This is great. This is a really cool release.
It is.
And besides that, I just don't have much to say about it. I just liked it. I was like, I like this.
I have another one that I saw that I just liked, and I don't really care anymore to talk about it. The Tag Heuer Formula One Automatic Chronograph Golf. I wish they did this on a Monaco or on a Aqua Racer. I think you can
get this in a Monaco.
I love this colorway. It's that vertical light blue, the vertical orange.
Traditional golf coloring, but with black instead of white.
Yep. I liked it. I have, even though I hate it.
I don't like this watch. I don't like the fancy schmancy modern Formula One. I think it's an ugly watch.
It scratches an itch for me in a kind of an embarrassing way. It's like when you get that itch between your cheeks and you like have to turn your back to the wall to get in there.
Is it titanium? Yeah, grade two.
Grade two titanium. Yeah. It's a Tag Heuer
carbon. Right? It's bezel. Blah blah blah.
How much cool shit can we put onto this watch and ruin it? And they did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And then they redeemed it with the golf colored wave.
Yeah. Fair enough. You liked the watch, but.
And that's all I want to talk about.
Don't have much to say about it.
Yeah.
Baltic. Baltic. Baltic doing good things as ever. Really, 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 really like the way Baltic releases watches. They've released a permanent Scalograph collection now, which was, I think the Scalograph was a limited version when it came out. I think they played with this design, but
it's, they like put feelers out with their special and limiteds, and then 3 years later it becomes a catalog.
That's right. It's a sports chronograph, super, super traditional aesthetic. But they have, this is kind of, I want to say this is a Universal Geneve homage-ish, right? But not specifically. It's more just like that's the vibe that I think Baltic is going for here. 39.5 millimeter sport chronograph. They've done a couple things here. One of the things they've done, which might not be immediately apparent, is they've beefed up the lugs. So Baltic sports chronographs tend to have very narrow lugs.
I don't think they beefed them up. I think they just made that end link wider to almost look, blend into the lug.
I don't think so. I think that they, so I went back and forth and I looked. I think they've beefed this up, which gives it a much sort of like more oomphy. The original Scalograph has lugs that kind of come into a point. And here we've got more of like a beefy sort of maxi case style thing.
I think you're overselling it. They're still very delicate lugs.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to just disagree. These are for this style of watch. These are beefy lugs. We do have a Sellita 510M, which is a manual wound 63 hour power reserve chronograph. Hand wound, which great, but it's still 14.1,
which it's fine for a chronograph. Chronographs tend to be thick, but this is a 30, but like why go hand wound? 39
by 14 one, yeah. And you can't get it under 13.
Why go hand wound and then not? We've only got 100 meters of water resistance, despite the fact that this looks like it's got screw down pushers. I do not believe it does. I think these pushers are just aesthetically
knurled.
Yeah. Which looks good. I love it. But 100 meters of water resistance, I thought, well, if we're going to, which is up from 50 meters on the original, but you know, you think, gosh, if we're going to do this,
why not go all the way?
Yeah, do it, go all the way. I don't know. We do have T markers. Dump
it down to 30 and pull it under 13.
This is a beautiful watch. It comes in three colorways. There's sort of a blue, there's like a graphite, and then like tan. Each of them has off-white subdials. They're great subdials.
Big kills on the blue.
Baltic is really, really good. Color-matched aluminum bezels, beads of rice bracelets on these. Fantastic finishing. They did switch from a circular brushing on the lugs to vertical brushing, which I think actually cleans this watch up a lot. This is a great release.
Yes.
These are great watches, and they're not expensive. I mean, they're $1,700.
Yeah, they're under $2,000.
Yeah.
Which is for a hand wound chronograph, that's existing in a uncommon territory.
Yeah. I love the way Baltic does its bezels. This sort of sits above the watch, kind of saucer like, you know, reminiscent of many, many watches that were released back in the 60s and 70s. This is just a very good looking classic sports chronograph with completely modern components and finishing. This is a terrific release.
Concur.
I like it, Baltic. Well done. Good updates too to a really good existing platform.
Thank you for being iterative in a good way.
Anything else, Andrew?
I can probably delete the rest of these links. I actually don't care about any of them.
Other things, what do you got?
So last week I did something I have not done since I was a child.
You brush your teeth?
No.
Okay. Still waiting on that one.
Yeah, we're just going one step at a time. So City of Eugene has for a little while longer, a minor league baseball team. And they play at the University of Oregon's baseball stadium. Tickets are always cheap. And I've just never gone.
Really?
Never gone. So last week, the club do partnerships for every game and like all kinds of promotions to try to get people to come. So it was a fundraising and partnership night for Boys and Girls Club. It was also Princess Night. So if you came dressed up as a princess, you got in for like $5. If you were a Boys and Girls Club kid, like your whole family got in. But my older son got to throw out one of the first pitches of the game. So two kids from his club got selected to go throw out the first pitch, and he threw one out, and it was the coolest thing ever. But then I obviously stayed to watch baseball, and I was like, oh my gosh, why don't I do this?
And you know, I have invited you to baseball games.
To more than one game. And I just never go, because like I don't really care about watching baseball until like September, October, when
and
it's
you're not like, really like a going out and doing sports games. It's just not your vibe.
I like going to duck games, but also like duck football games. But
sure,
you know, for the last 7 years, it was easier to work at them because then I got in for free and got paid,
right.
And I didn't have to wait in traffic in either direction. Like it was you know, it's whatever. But if you have a minor league team in your city, I just could not recommend more going, because it doesn't feel like a professional setting. It's fun. It's family oriented. It's a little silly because they're trying so hard. Mm-hmm. Like not the athletes, but the actual like front of house, like the team management that's there trying to promote the team. Man, it was just a blast.
Yeah.
So if you have a team locally to you, And you're sleeping on this, wake up, crawl out from under your rock, and trust me, I know, I like the rock that I live under. Go watch minor league baseball in your city.
Yeah, we've got a couple of teams here locally.
The Drifters are also...
That's right. We've got a college summer wood bat team, you know, a college summer league wood bat team. And then we've also got the M's, which the Emeralds, which are a San Francisco Giants affiliate. I think in particular, if you follow like a regional major league team, there's a lot of opportunities to see up and comer farm club, you know. So I'm a Mariners fan. Good friend of the show, Blaine Townsend, is a Giants fan, you know. And so when the Everett Aqua Sox, for instance, are playing in...
That's who they were playing when I went to see.
In Eugene, right?
And they roasted them all night. Rather than putting the player's picture up when they were at bat, they put up different Disney princesses.
That's pretty good.
It was just like no one mentioned it, and they never stopped. It wasn't like just the first guy. It was just all night. Every time one of their batters was up, it was a Disney princess.
You know, you get a chance to see like, and do a little... If you go, feel free to just to go... You know, raw dog it. But also, if you do just a little bit of research, sometimes you get an opportunity to see it like, oh, this guy is going to be in the major leagues next year, right? Or perhaps this year, right? This is a guy that's, you know, one of the top 100 prospects in the country or whatever, right? There can be some fun opportunities. And in fact, I've been to games before where, you know, there was a kid who was maybe, he was only going to be in Eugene for 5 or 6 games. And then, you know, we go to a game and he crushes a couple balls out, and you're like, that guy's going to be a Mariner by the end of the season. Sure enough, that season or next season, we see him on TV. You know, it's like,
and you can get his autograph. Like, he wants your attention while he's playing in this farm league because he just doesn't make any money. He's just doing it for the love of the game.
And I don't think you need that. You don't need that sort of appreciation to enjoy the games, because it's just a lot of fun too. It's just a lot of fun. So. Well done. I'm glad you did that. And Mark's first pitch was—he
didn't quite make it to the plate.
No, it was,
but it was almost a catchable ball. I was talking to him the night before, and I was like, "Well, are you nervous?" And he's like, "Yes, I'm nervous. I'm gonna be pitching against a professional baseball player."
Not exactly.
Well, he didn't realize that because he's like in the backyard, like. He's like throwing practicing. Throwing the baseball as hard as he can into the net. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm warming up and practicing. I got to practice. And I was like, okay, weirdo. And then I asked him later. I'm like, you nervous? He's like, yeah, I'm gonna be pitching as a professional baseball player. I'm like, no, you are not. It's just a traditional thing where somebody is getting honored and they throw the pitch to the catcher. Like the guy's not even in gear. Like, you're just going to throw him the ball. That's right. Just like playing catch.
And there will be no batter.
No. And he's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm not nervous. I'm fine.
That's funny. Andrew, I've got another thing this week. And I think I think this is the best thing this is one of those times where I have stumbled upon the best in class thing. And so I wanted to talk about it a little bit. So the thing is, I'm going to bury the lead a little bit here. The thing is quarter inch hex holders, right? So the standard for, you know, anytime you have a bit, like a screwdriver bit.
It's liable to get lost.
Those are most likely quarter inch. And there's a couple different standards, but probably you're looking at like a E6.3 standard bit. That's what we use, at least, you know, in the United States and the Western world. And there's all sorts of things that do this. You know, oftentimes what we see is a magnetic quarter inch hexagonal opening with a magnet in the bottom of it. And I've got a number of options in my tool cabinet of that exactly. In fact, I'm holding here a Japanese version of this. This is a Vessel magnetic. Vessel's a Japanese company. Magnetic quarter inch bit holder. And I'm just going to hand it to you. And you can feel the engagement there. So basically you drop the bit in and it sinks into a very firm...
You don't even have to place it in. You just set it nearish.
But now I want you to go ahead and set it in there. And now sort of manipulate the bit a little bit side to side. And, you know,
there's a little play.
There's a little play, right? This is actually a fun device.
and plug it into this. Plug the back end into that. So this is actually a ratcheting vessel. No. The other side. Here, let me see.
Yeah, now I don't understand what you want. Oh, okay. Now I understand.
So this is a Vessel 2200 MBH. This is a Japanese made ratcheting screwdriver. It's wonderful. I love this thing. It's a ratcheting screwdriver. It's pretty long. You can pull the front off and turn it into a stubby, which is nice for accessibility. I love it. This was previously my favorite quarter inch bit driver. But there's a number.
The clicks are good.
Very
good. Little bit of reverse play, but not like an offensive amount.
I've also got Klein's got their flip socket setup, which I have and I really like. And with that setup, you can lock one into. They've got like a quarter inch flip socket that you can. It's fine.
Also like untenably large.
Well, that's because we got the flip sockets. You can pull those off. Anyway, it's fine. The lockup's not quite as good. The bit doesn't sit quite as well in there. It's got a little bit more play, but it works. If you just want to drive.
If you use a Klein bit, like a brand match bit, does it fit better than DeWalt?
No, okay. No. It's sort of like, so I've got a DeWalt bit in there, and there's a reason. I brought a bunch of different things. Now, this one is interesting, Andrew. This is actually a quarter inch square to quarter inch hex. This is made by a Japanese company called Koken. And actually, that's not the best bit. Let's use that. Let's use that. So this is a Japanese company called Koken. This is a locking bit. And this it will lock the bit in, and it's nice, but it's got just a ton of play. Koken's a great Japanese company. They make really cool shit. But like manipulate that bit in the end of that holder.
This feels like one of those things that's designed to be loose to prevent it from breaking. It's like a torsion prevention. Like a mitigator.
It is objectively a wild amount of play.
I like the lock though.
The lock is nice. Now, I've also got this. I've also got this locking Klein impact. And this thing's interesting because it locks, and then you can also. It's got this like double lock system, so you screw this little thing up. And okay, this is my favorite locking system. You feel how much tighter that is.
As opposed to when that collar is open.
As opposed to anything else you've held. So the bit is held.
It's quite a bit tighter.
And then I've got another vessel. We don't need to go through every one of these, but I recently picked up what's called a Weeha. Weeha's a German company. And
how do you unlock this?
So you first unscrew that.
Yep.
Yep. Unscrew that.
It's all the way open.
And then you pull down that black collar.
Oh, the middle collar.
Yeah, okay. There you go. And it comes out. Yeah. So the locking mechanism, this is the Klein Impact. I like this one a lot. It's specifically for like plugging into like an impact driver. Right. That's what this is for. Andrew, I picked up a Weeha. This is called the Centrofix Power Blade Holder. This thing is nuts.
Is this just like what tolerance is made for?
This is...
Yikes.
The best blade holder that exists in the world. I'm confident of that. So it is a simple up to unlock, down to lock. You slide a bit in.
There's just no.
It is like, so I've got a bunch of different blades, and we don't have to stick them all in there. But what I do have here is I've got these long. This is just a Weeha impact blade, but hand me that. So it's not just these bits. It's every single bit I've ever tried in these things. This is a long, this is a 4-inch impact bit. I'm just going to plug this thing in here and hand it to you because this is all of a sudden, it's a screwdriver.
Yeah, that's like a solid shank. There's no...
It is no... less stable. I've just handed Andrew like a Klein, just a solid shank Klein rubber grip.
That thing is,
it is, these things are incredible. They're made in Germany. A lot of Weeha stuff is made in the Czech Republic. These are made in Germany And it is, I think this is the finest tool of its kind that exists on Earth. It doesn't ratchet. It's got nothing fancy.
Besides probably the most exceptional locking mechanism I've ever seen.
If you use, and so it is kind of a deep, so if you stick tiny, like 1-inch bits in there, they kind of tend to get lost. But anything longer than a 50 millimeter or a 2-inch bit, or, you know, in particular, these longer 4-inch bits, you stick them in there and it's a screwdriver, Andrew. And so if you want to have one handle that you can put any number of bits here, I've got this is a Weeha impact bit set, or whatever they call these, the Terminator Blue or whatever. And in here I've got like a Torx 20, Torx 25. I've got Ebery Phillips, but I've got square bits. If I carry this and this, I've got pretty much any bit I'll ever need. And this thing is absolutely locked in.
What's it called?
It's the Weeha Power Blade Holder. Weeha Power Blade Holder. So I think it's the 1/4-inch, or it's the 387. Weeha 387 Power Blade Bit Holder. Again, no ratcheting mechanism, nothing fancy. It's got a fantastic, Weeha makes really nice handles. So you've got a good rubber grip, very ergonomic. And they're not super expensive either. It's like $30.
Well, this one, the soft finish Torque Vario.
No, that's not that one.
$175. But the soft finish Centrofix bit holder. Centrofix. $40.
Yeah.
$40.
$40. It is, if you use 1/4-inch hex bits at all, this thing is absurd. I cannot believe how firmly it holds.
It doesn't really make sense because it's
got a series of ball bearings in here in two different positions, and they run along the shank. So when you lock that down, it is mechanically pushing those bearings,
all of them, yeah,
into the sides, which gives you, I mean, it's,
I think it's because of the length of the bit that it can accept. It's not just using a magnet. It's not using friction.
That's right. And it's both up and down, and
it's almost like using a chuck to tighten it down.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it's crazy. You'd think like other companies should be able to do this, but I have just about every 1/4-inch. I've got just about every 1/4-inch holder, some form of that or another that you can possibly own, and there's nothing like this. This is just best in class. I love it. Weeha Centro. There'll be a link in the show notes. Centrofix Power Blade Holder. It's terrific.
It's a league in its own.
It's the craziest thing. So anyway, I picked it up. I haven't bought one. You know, Weeha's kind of a weird brand. They make some, they're kind of like the Klein Tools of Europe, which is to say they make some really good, carefully sort of provenanced stuff. And then they have a whole bunch of SKUs that's just trash as well. But I think they, like so many companies, if you get the right stuff, it is really, really good. This tool is. That's all I have to say about that.
All right. Well, you've done it.
I said a lot.
I would say, a little.
Anything else you want to add?
No, I'm out of things.
Thanks, folks, for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. You can go to our website, watchclicker.com, and see the things we have on there. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do that on Instagram at 40and20_watchclicker or at watchclicker. That's where we do our social media stuff. If you want to support us, and oh boy, we hope you do. Numbers are down this year, guys. I don't know what's happening. Maybe you just don't like us anymore.
It's us.
Patreon.com/40and20. That is how we get all the support for the show. And the numbers we have to spend aren't going down, but the numbers we get are. So maybe just consider, if you like the show, going and kicking a buck. And don't forget to tune back in next Tuesday for another hour of Watches, Food, Drinks, Life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.